Hi, welcome to History's Great Speeches. I'm Charles Featherston, voice artist, narrator and compiler of the series. Please like or subscribe and feel free to contact me via Bandcamp, Podbean, Facebook or Patreon to let me know speeches or time periods you'd like to see covered. You can find a full set of links at my website, charlesfeatherston.uk.
On the Crown, Part 2. The Amphician War, I say, which brought Philip to Elateia, which caused him to be the chosen general of the Amphictyons, which ruined everything in Greece, was this man's contrivance. He is the single author of all our heaviest calamities. I protested at the time and cried out in the assembly, "You are bringing a war, Aeschines, into Attica, an Amphictonic war." But his packed party would not let me be heard. The rest wondered and supposed that I was bringing an idle charge against him out of personal enmity. However, the real character of those transactions, the purpose for which they were got up, the manner in which they were accomplished, hear ye now, men of Athens, as ye were prevented then. You will see that the thing was well concerted, and it will help you much to get a knowledge of public affairs, and what craftiness there was in Philip, you will observe. Philip could neither finish nor get rid of the war with Athens unless he made the Thebans and Thessalians her enemies. Though your generals fought against him without fortune or skill, yet from the war itself and the cruisers he suffered infinite damage. He could neither export any of the produce of his country nor import what he needed. He was not then superior to you at sea, nor able to reach Attica unless the Thessalians followed him and the Thebans gave him passage. So that, while he overcame in war the generals whom you sent out, such as they were, I say nothing about that, he found himself distressed by the difference of your local position and means. Should he urge either Thessalians or Thebans to march in his own quarrel against you, none, he thought, would attend to him. But should he, under the pretense of taking up their common cause, be elected general, he trusted partly by deceit and partly by persuasion to gain his ends more easily. He sets to work, therefore, observe how cleverly, to get the Amphictyons into a war and create a disturbance in the Congress. For this he thought they would immediately want him. Now, if any of the presbyters commissioned by himself or any of his allies brought it forward, he imagined that both Thebans and Thessalians would suspect the thing and would all be on their guard. Whereas, if the agents were an Athenian and commissioned by you his opponents, it would easily pass unnoticed. And thus it turned out. How did he effect his purpose? He hires the prosecutor. No one, I believe, was aware of the thing or attending to it, and so, just as these things are usually done at Athens, Aeschines was proposed for Pelian deputy, three or four held up their hands for him, and his election was declared. When clothed with the dignity of the state, he arrived among the Amphictyons. Dismissing and disregarding all beside, he hastened to execute what he was hired for. He makes up a pretty speech and story, showing how the Cirrhaean plain came to be consecrated, reciting this to the presbyters, men unused to speeches and unsuspicious of any consequences. The mention of this man's treasonable acts brings me to the part which I have myself taken in opposition to him. It is fair you should hear my account of it for many reasons, but chiefly, men of Athens, because it would be a shame, when I have undergone the toil of exertions on your behalf, that you should not endure the bare recital of them. When I say that the Thebans, and may I add the Athenians, were so led away by Philip's partisans and the corrupt men of either state, as to disregard and take no precaution against a danger which menaced both and required the utmost precaution, I mean the suffering Philip's power to increase, and were readily disposed to enmity and strife with each other. I was constantly watchful to prevent it, not only because in my own judgment I deemed such vigilance expedient, but knowing that Aristophon and again Eubulus had all along desired to bring about that union, and while they were frequently opposed on other matters, were always agreed upon this. Men whom in their lifetime, you reptile, you pestered with flattery, yet see not that you are accusing them in their graves. For the Theban policy that you reproach me with a charge is less affecting me than them, who approved that alliance before I did. But I must return. I say, when Aeschines had excited the war in Amphissa and his coadjutors had helped to establish enmity with Thebes, Philip marched against us. That was the object for which these persons embroiled the states. And had we not roused up a little in time, we could never have recovered ourselves. So far had these men carried matters. Now, Aeschines, how would you have me describe you, and how myself, upon that day? Shall I call myself Batulus, your nickname of reproach, and you not even a hero of the common sort, but one of those upon the stage, Cresphontes or Creon, or Canomaeus, whom you execrably murdered once at Colytus? Well, upon that occasion, I, the Batulus of Panea, was more serviceable to the state than you, the Canomaeus of Cotadei. You were of no earthly use. I did everything which became a good citizen. Had I attempted to say that I instructed you in sentiments worthy of your ancestors, there is not a man who would not justly rebuke me. What I declare is that such principles are your own. I show that before my time such was the spirit of the Commonwealth. Though certainly in the execution of the particular measures, I claim a share also for myself. The prosecutor, arraigning the whole proceedings and embittering you against me as the cause of our alarms and dangers, in his eagerness to deprive me of honour for the moment, robs you of the eulogies that should endure for ever. For should you, under a disbelief in the wisdom of my policy, convict the defendant, you would appear to have done wrong, not to have suffered what befell you by the cruelty of fortune. But never, never can you have done wrong, O Athenians, in undertaking the battle for the freedom and safety of all. I swear it by your forefathers, those that met the peril at Marathon, those that took the field at Plataeae, those in the sea fight at Salamis, and those at Artemisium, and many other brave men who repose in the public monuments, all of whom alike, as being worthy of the same honour, the country buried Aeschines, not only the successful or victorious. Justly, for the duty of brave men has been done by all, their fortune has been such as the deity assigned to each. Accursed scribbler! You, to deprive me of the approbation and affection of my countrymen, speak of trophies and battles and ancient deeds, with none of which had this present trial the least concern. But I, you third-rate actor, I, that rose to counsel the state how to maintain her preeminence, in what spirit was I to mount the hustings? In the spirit of one having unworthy counsel to offer? I should have deserved to perish. You yourselves, men of Athens, may not try private and public causes on the same principle. The compacts of everyday life you are to judge of by particular laws and circumstances, the measures of statesmen by reference to the dignity of your ancestors. And if you think it your duty to act worthily of them, you should every one of you consider, when you come into court to decide public questions, that together with your staff and ticket, the spirit of the Commonwealth is delivered to you. Athenians, you have had many great and renowned orators before me. The famous Callistratus, Aristophon, Cephalus, Thrasybulus, hundreds of others, yet none of them ever thoroughly devoted himself to any measure of state. For instance, the mover of a resolution would not be ambassador, the ambassador would not move a resolution. Each one left for himself some relief, and also, should anything happen, an excuse. How then, it may be said, did you so far surpass others in might and boldness as to do everything yourself? I don't say that, but such was my conviction of the danger impending over us that I considered it left no room or thought for individual security. A man should have been only too happy to perform his duty without neglect. As to myself, I was persuaded, perhaps foolishly, yet I was persuaded that none would move better resolutions than myself, none would execute them better, none as ambassador would show more zeal and honesty. Therefore, I undertook every duty myself. Through my policy, which he arraigns, instead of the Thebans invading this country with Philip, as all expected, they joined our ranks and prevented him. Instead of the war being in Attica, it took place several hundred furlongs from the city on the confines of Boeotia. Instead of corsairs issuing from Euboea to plunder us, Attica was in peace on the coastside during the whole war. Instead of Philip being master of the Hellespont by taking Byzantium, the Byzantines were our auxiliaries against him. Does this computation of services, think you, resemble the casting of accounts? Or should we strike these out on a balance and not look that they be kept in everlasting remembrance? I will not set down that of the cruelty, remarkable in cases where Philip got people all at once into his power, others have had the trial. While of the generosity which, casting about for his future purposes, he assumed toward Athens, you have happily enjoyed the fruits. I pass that by. If you talk about just conditions with the Thebans, Iceni's, or with the Byzantines or Euboeans, or discuss now the question of equal terms, first I say, you are ignorant that of those galleys formerly which defended Greece, being 300 in number, our Commonwealth furnished 200, and never, as it seemed, thought herself injured by having done so, never prosecuted those who advised it or expressed any dissatisfaction. Shame on her if she had. But was grateful to the gods that, when a common danger beset the Greeks, she alone furnished double what the rest did for the preservation of all. Besides, it is but a poor favour you do your countrymen by calumniating me. For what is the use of telling us now what we should have done? Why, being in the city and present, did you not make your proposals then? If indeed they were practicable at a crisis, when we had to accept not what we liked but what the circumstances allowed? Remember, there was one ready to bid against us, to welcome eagerly those that we rejected, and give money into the bargain. But if I am accused for what I have actually done, how would it have been if, through my hard bargaining, the states had gone off and attached themselves to Philip, and he had become master at the same time of Euboea, Thebes, and Byzantium? What, think ye, these impious men would have said or done? Said, doubtless, that the states were abandoned, that they wished to join us and were driven away, that he had got command of the Hellespont by the Byzantines and become master of the corn trade of Greece, that a heavy neighbour war had by means of the Thebans been brought into Attica, that the sea had become unnavigable by the excursion of pirates from Euboea. All this would they have said sure enough, and a great deal besides. A wicked, wicked thing, O Athenians, is a calumniator always, every way spiteful and fault-finding. But this creature is a reptile by nature, that from the beginning never did anything honest or liberal, a very ape of a tragedian, village Dromaeus, counterfeit orator. What advantage has your eloquence been to your country? Now do you speak to us about the past? As if a physician should visit his patients, and not order or prescribe anything to cure their disease, but on the death of anyone, when the last ceremonies were performing, should follow him to his grave and expound how, if the poor fellow had done this or that, he never would have died. Idiot, do you speak now? Even the defeat, if you exult in that which should make you groan, you accursed one, by nothing that I have done will it appear to have befallen us. Consider it thus, O Athenians. From no embassy on which I was commissioned by you did I ever come away defeated by the ambassadors of Philip, neither from Thessaly, nor from Ambracia, nor from the kings of Thrace, nor from Byzantium, nor from any other place, nor on the last recent occasion from Thebes. But where his ambassadors were vanquished in argument, he came with arms and carried the day. And for this you call me to account, and are not ashamed to jeer the same person for cowardice, whom you require single-handed to overcome the might of Philip, and that, too, by words. For what else had I at my command? Certainly not the spirit of each individual, nor the fortune of the army, nor the conduct of the war, for which you would make me accountable. Such a blunderer are you. Yet understand me. Of what a statesman may be responsible for, I allow the utmost scrutiny. I deprecate it not. What are his functions? To observe things in the beginning, to foresee and foretell them to others. This I have done. Again, wherever he finds delays, backwardness, ignorance, jealousies, vices inherent and unavoidable in all communities, to contract them into the narrowest compass, and, on the other hand, to promote unanimity and friendship and zeal in the discharge of duty. All this, too, I have performed, and no one can discover the least neglect on my part. Ask any man by what means Philip achieved most of his successes, and you will be told by his army and by his bribing and corrupting men in power. Well, your forces were not under my command or control, so I cannot be questioned for anything done in that department. But by refusing the price of corruption, I have overcome Philip. For as the offerer of a bribe, if it be accepted, has vanquished the taker, so the person who refuses it and is not corrupted has vanquished the person offering. Therefore is the Commonwealth undefeated, as far as I am concerned. For my part, I regard anyone who reproaches his fellow man with fortune as devoid of sense. He that is best satisfied with his condition, he that deems his fortune excellent, cannot be sure that it will remain so until the evening. How then can it be right to bring it forward, or upbraid another man with it? As Aeschines, however, has on this subject, besides many others, expressed himself with insolence, look, men of Athens, and observe how much more truth and humanity there shall be in my discourse upon fortune than in his. I hold the fortune of our commonwealth to be good, and so I find the oracles of Donidae and Jupiter and Pythian Apollo declaring to us. The fortune of all mankind, which now prevails, I consider cruel and dreadful. For what Greek, what barbarian, has not, in these times, experienced a multitude of evils? That Athens chose the noblest policy, that she fares better than those Greeks who thought, if they abandoned us, they should abide in prosperity, I reckon as part of her good fortune. If she suffers reverses, if all happened not to us as we desired, I conceive she has had that share of the general fortune which fell to our lot. As to my fortune, personally speaking, or that of any individual among us, it should, as I conceive, be judged of in connection with personal matters. Such is my opinion upon the subject of fortune, a right and just one, as it appears to me, and I think you will agree with it. Aeschines says that my individual fortune is paramount to that of the commonwealth, the small and mean to the good and great. How can this possibly be? However, if you are determined, Aeschines, to scrutinize my fortune, compare it with your own, and if you find my fortune better than yours, cease to revile it. Look then from the very beginning, and I pray and entreat that I may not be condemned for bad taste. I don't think any person wise who insults poverty or who prides himself on having been bred in affluence. But by the slander and malice of this cruel man, I am forced into such a discussion, which I will conduct with all the moderation which circumstances allow. I had the advantage, Aeschines, in my boyhood of going to proper schools and having such allowance as a boy should have who is to do nothing mean from indigence. Arrived at man's estate, I lived suitably to my breeding, was choir master, ship commander, rate payer, backward in no acts of liberality, public or private, but making myself useful to the commonwealth and to my friends. When I entered upon state affairs, I chose such a line of politics that both by my country and many people of Greece I have been crowned many times, and not even you, my enemies, venture to say that the line I chose was not honourable. Such then has been the fortune of my life. I could enlarge upon it, but I forbear lest what I pride myself in should give offence. But you, the man of dignity, who spit upon others, look what sort of fortune is yours compared with mine. As a boy you were reared in abject poverty, waiting with your father in his school, grinding the ink, sponging the benches, sweeping the room, doing the duty of a menial rather than a freeborn man. After you were grown up, you attended your mother in the initiations, reading her books and helping in all the ceremonies. At night, wrapping the novitiates in fawnskin, swilling, purifying, and scouring them with clay and bran, raising them after the lustration, and bidding them say, "Bad I have scraped, and better I have found," priding yourself that no one ever howled so lustily. And I believe him, for don't suppose that he who speaks so loud is not a splendid howler. In the daytime you led your noble orgiasts, crowned with fennel and poplar, through the highways, squeezing the big-cheeked serpents and lifting them over your head and shouting Evo Sabo and capering to the words Hyas Attas, Attas Hyas, saluted by the beldams as leader, conductor, chest-bearer, fan-bearer and the like, getting as your reward tarts and biscuits and rolls, for which any man might well bless himself and his fortune. When you were enrolled among your fellow townsmen, by what means I stop not to inquire, when you were enrolled, however, you immediately selected the most honourable of employments, that of clerk and assistant to our petty magistrates. From this you were removed after a while, having done yourself all that you charge others with. And then, sure enough, you disgraced not your antecedents by your subsequent life, but hiring yourself to those ranting players, as they were called, Simulus and Socrates, you acted third parts, collecting figs and grapes and olives like a fruiterer from other men's farms, and getting more from them than from the playing, in which the lives of your whole company were at stake. For there was an implacable and incessant war between them and the audience, from whom you received so many wounds, that no wonder you taunt as cowards people inexperienced in such encounters. But passing over what may be imputed to poverty, I will come to the direct charges against your character. You espoused such a line of politics, when at last you thought of taking to them, that, if your country prospered, you lived the life of a hare, fearing and trembling and ever expecting to be scourged for the crimes of which your conscience accused you. Though all have seen how bold you were during the misfortunes of the rest. A man who took courage at the death of 1,000 citizens, what does he deserve at the hands of the living? A great deal more than I could say about him I shall omit, for it is not all I can tell of his turpitude and infamy which I ought to let slip from my tongue, but only what is not disgraceful to myself to mention. Contrast now the circumstances of your life and mine, gently and with temper, Aeschines, and then ask these people whose fortune they would each of them prefer. You taught reading, I went to school. You performed initiations, I received them. You danced in the chorus, I furnished it. You were assembly clerk, I was speaker. You acted third parts, I heard you. You broke down, and I hissed. You have worked as a statesman for the enemy, I for my country. I pass by the rest, but this very day I am on my probation for a crown, and am acknowledged to be innocent of all offence. While you are already judged to be a pettifogger, and the question is whether you shall continue that trade, or at once be silenced by not getting a fifth part of the votes. A happy fortune, do you see, you have enjoyed, that you should denounce mine as miserable. I will have done then with private topics, but say another word or two upon public. If you can mention, Aeschines, a single man under the sun, whether Greek or barbarian, who has not suffered by Philip's power formerly and Alexander's now, well and good. I concede to you that my fortune, or misfortune, if you please, has been the cause of everything. But if many that never saw me or heard my voice have been grievously afflicted, not individuals only but whole cities and nations, how much juster and fairer is it to consider that to the common fortune apparently of all men, to a tide of events overwhelming and lamentable, these disasters are to be attributed? You, disregarding all this, accuse me whose ministry has been among my countrymen, knowing all the while that a part, if not the whole, of your calumny falls upon the people and yourself in particular. For if I assumed the sole and absolute direction of our councils, it was open to you, the other speakers, to accuse me. But if you were constantly present in all the assemblies, if the state invited public discussion of what was expedient, and if these measures were then believed by all to be the best, and especially by you, for certainly from no good will did you leave me in possession of hopes and admirations and honours, all of which attended on my policy, but doubtless because you were compelled by the truth and had nothing better to advise. Is it not iniquitous and monstrous to complain now of measures than which you could suggest none better at the time? I should conclude, Aishanese, that you undertook this cause to exhibit your eloquence and strength of lungs, not to obtain satisfaction for any wrong. But it is not the language of an orator, Aishanese, that has any value, nor yet the tone of his voice, but his adopting the same views with the people, and his hating and loving the same persons that his country does. He that is thus minded will say everything with loyal intention. He that courts persons from whom the Commonwealth apprehends danger to herself rides not on the same anchorage with the people, and, therefore, has not the same expectation of safety. But, do you see, I have, for my objects are the same with those of my countrymen. I have no interest separate or distinct. Is that so with you? How can it be, when immediately after the battle you went as ambassador to Philip, who was at that period the author of your country's calamities, notwithstanding that you had before persisted in refusing that office, as all men know? And who is it that deceives the state? Surely the man who speaks not what he thinks. On whom does the crier pronounce a curse? Surely on such a man. What greater crime can an orator be charged with than that his opinions and his language are not the same? Such is found to be your character. And yet you open your mouth and dare to look these men in the faces. Do you think they don't know you? Or are sunk in such slumber and oblivion as not to remember the speeches which you delivered in the assembly, cursing and swearing that you had nothing to do with Philip, and that I brought that charge against you out of personal enmity without foundation? No sooner came the news of the battle than you forgot all that. You acknowledged and avowed that between Philip and yourself there subsisted a relation of hospitality and friendship. New names these for your contract of hire. For upon what plea of equality or justice could Aishanes, son of Glaucadea, the timbrel player, be the friend or acquaintance of Philip? I cannot see. No, you were hired to ruin the interests of your countrymen, and yet, though you have been caught yourself in open treason and informed against yourself after the fact, you revile and reproach me for things which you will find any man is chargeable with sooner than I. Many great and glorious enterprises has the Commonwealth, Aishanese, undertaken and succeeded in through me, and she did not forget them. Here is the proof. On the election of a person to speak the funeral oration immediately after the event, you were proposed, but the people would not have you. Notwithstanding your fine voice, nor Demades, though he had just made the peace, nor Hegemon, nor any other of your party, but me. And when you and Pythocles came forward in a brutal and shameful manner, O merciful heaven, and urged the same accusations against me which you do now, and abused me, they elected me all the more. The reason, you are not ignorant of it, yet I will tell you. The Athenians knew as well the loyalty and zeal with which I conducted their affairs as the dishonesty of you and your party. For what you denied upon oath in our prosperity, you confessed in the misfortunes of the Republic. They considered, therefore, that men who got security for their politics by the public disasters had been their enemies long before, and were then avowedly such. They thought it right also that the person who was to speak in honour of the fallen and celebrate their valour should not have sat under the same roof or at the same table with their antagonists. That he should not revel there and sing a paean over the calamities of Greece in company with their murderers, and then come here and receive distinction. That he should not with his voice act the mourner of their fate, but that he should lament over them with his heart. This they perceived in themselves and in me, but not in any of you. Therefore they elected me, and not you. Nor, while the people felt thus, did the fathers and brothers of the deceased, who were chosen by the people to perform their obsequies, feel differently. For having to order the funeral banquet, according to custom, at the house of the nearest relative to the deceased, they ordered it at mine. And with reason, because, though each to his own was nearer of kin than I was, none was so near to them all collectively. He that had the deepest interest in their safety and success had upon their mournful disaster the largest share of sorrow for them all. of this base and infamous conspiracy and prodigacy, or rather, O Athenians, if I am to speak in earnest, of this betrayal of Grecian liberty. Athens is by all mankind acquitted, owing to my counsels, and I am acquitted by you. Then do you ask me, Aeschines, for what merit I claim to be honoured? I will tell you. Because while all the statesmen in Greece, beginning with yourself, have been corrupted formerly by Philip and now by Alexander, me neither opportunity, nor fair speeches, nor large promises, nor hope, nor fear, nor anything else could tempt or induce to betray aught that I considered just and beneficial to my country. Whatever I have advised my fellow citizens, I have never advised like you men, leaning as in a balance to the side of profit. All my proceedings have been those of a soul upright, honest, and incorrupt, entrusted with affairs of greater magnitude than any of my contemporaries. I have administered them all honestly and faithfully. Therefore do I claim to be honoured. These and the like measures, Aeschines, are what become an honourable citizen. By their success, O heaven and earth, we should have been the greatest of people incontestably, and deserve to be so. Even under their failure, the result is glory, and no one blames Athens or her policy, or condemn fortune that so ordered things. But never will he desert the interests of the Commonwealth, nor hire himself to her adversaries, and study the enemy's advantage instead of his country's. Nor on a man who has courage to advise and propose measures worthy of the state, and resolution to persevere in them, will he cast an evil eye, and, if anyone privately offends him, remember and treasure it up. No, nor keep himself in a criminal and treacherous retirement, as you so often do. There is indeed a retirement just and beneficial to the state, such as you, the bulk of my countrymen, innocently enjoy. That, however, is not the retirement of Aeschines. Far from it. Withdrawing himself from public life when he pleases, and that is often, he watches for the moment when you are tired of a constant speaker, or when some reverse of fortune has befallen you, or anything untoward has happened, and many are the casualties of human life. At such a crisis he springs up an orator, rising from his retreat like a wind. In full voice, with words and phrases collected, he rolls them out audibly and breathlessly, to no advantage or good purpose whatsoever, but to the detriment of some or other of his fellow citizens and to the general disgrace. Yet from this labour and diligence, Aeschines, if it proceeded from an honest heart, solicitous for your country's welfare, the fruits should have been rich and noble and profitable to all. Alliances of states, supplies of money, conveniences of commerce, enactments of useful laws, opposition to our declared enemies. All such things were looked for in former times, and many opportunities did the past afford for a good man and true to show himself. During which time you are nowhere to be found, neither first, second, third, fourth, fifth, nor sixth, not in any rank at all, certainly on no service by which your country was exalted. For what alliance has come to the state by your procurement? What succours, what acquisition of goodwill or credit? What embassy or agency is there of yours by which the reputation of the country has been increased? What concern domestic, Hellenic, or foreign, of which you have had the management, has improved under it? What galleys, what ammunition, what arsenals, what repair of walls? What cavalry? What in the world are you good for? What assistance in money have you ever given, either to the rich or the poor, out of public spirit or liberality? None. But, good sir, if there is nothing of this, there is at all events zeal and loyalty. Where? When? You infamous fellow! Even at a time when all who ever spoke upon the platform gave something for the public safety, and last, Aristonicus gave the sum which he had amassed to retrieve the franchise, you neither came forward nor contributed a mite, not from inability. No, for you have inherited above 5 talents from Philo, your wife's father, and you had a subscription of 2 talents from the chairman of the boards for what you did to cut up the navy law. But that I may not go from one thing to another and lose sight of the question, I pass this by. That it was not poverty prevented your contributing already appears. It was, in fact, your anxiety to do nothing against those to whom your political life is subservient. On what occasions, then, do you show your spirit? When do you shine out? When aught is to be spoken against your countrymen, then it is you who are splendid in voice, perfect in memory, an admirable actor, a tragic Theocrines. You mention the good men of olden times, and you are right so to do. Yet it is hardly fair, O Athenians, that he should get the advantage of that respect which you have for the dead, to compare and contrast me with them, me who am living among you. For what mortal is ignorant that toward the living there exists always more or less of ill will, whereas the dead are no longer hated even by an enemy? Such being human nature, am I to be tried and judged by the standards of my predecessors? Heaven forbid! It is not just nor equitable, Aeschines. Let we be compared with you, or any persons you like of your party who are still alive. And consider this, whether it is more honourable and better for the state that because of the services of a former age, prodigious though they are beyond all power of expression, those of the present generation should be unrequited and spurned, or that all who give proof of their good intentions should have their share of honour and regard from the people? Yet indeed, if I must say so much, my politics and principles, if considered fairly, will be found to resemble those of the illustrious ancients, and to have the same objects in view, while yours resemble those of their calumniators. For it is certain there were persons in those times who ran down the living and praised people dead and gone with a malignant purpose like yourself. You say that I am nothing like the ancients. Are you like them, Aeschines? Is your brother, or any of our speakers? I assert that none is. But pray, my good fellow, that I may give you no other name, try the living with the living and with his competitors, as you would in all cases, poets, dancers, athletes. Philemon did not, because he was inferior to Glaucus of Carystus and some other champions of a bygone age, depart uncrowned from Olympia, but because he beat all who entered the ring against him, was crowned and proclaimed conqueror. So I ask you to compare me with the orators of the day, with yourself, with anyone you like. I yield to none. When the Commonwealth was at liberty to choose for her advantage, and patriotism was a matter of emulation, I showed myself a better counsellor than any, and every act of state was pursuant to my decrees and laws and negotiations. None of your party was to be seen, unless you had to do the Athenians a mischief. After that lamentable occurrence, when there was a call no longer for advisers, but for persons obedient to command, persons ready to be hired against their country and willing to flatter strangers, then all of you were in occupation, grand people with splendid equipages. I was powerless, I confess, though more attached to my countrymen than you. Two things, men of Athens, are characteristic of a well-disposed citizen. So may I speak of myself and give the least offence. In authority, his constant aim should be the dignity and preeminence of the Commonwealth. In all times and circumstances, his spirit should be loyal. This depends upon nature, power and might upon other things. Such a spirit, you will find, I have ever sincerely cherished. Only see, when my person was demanded, when they brought amphictonic suits against me, when they menaced, when they promised, when they set these miscreants like wild beasts upon me. Never in any way have I abandoned my affection for you. From the very beginning I chose an honest and straightforward course in politics, to support the honour, the power, the glory of my fatherland, these to exalt, in these to have been my being. I do not walk about the marketplace gay and cheerful because the stranger has prospered, holding out my right hand and congratulating those who I think will report it yonder, and on any news of our own success, shudder and groan and stoop to the earth, like these impious men who rail at Athens, as if, in so doing, they did not rail at themselves. Who look abroad, and if the foreigner thrives by the distresses of Greece, are thankful for it, and say we should keep him so thriving to all time. Never, O ye gods, may those wishes be confirmed by you. If possible, inspire even in these men a better sense and feeling. But if they are indeed incurable, destroy them by themselves. Exterminate them on land and sea. And for the rest of us, grant that we may speedily be released from our present fears and enjoy a lasting deliverance.